was in a pontoon boat, driven by my buddy Mike. We're fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. Emo brought his TV and Rowdy's beagle Fred. He's too old to drive a rabbit, so he comes fishing with us instead. We got lawn chairs, a poker table, an ice cold keg of beer. We're loaded.
You know, I just realized, Cale, you could actually put all that stuff on your boat.
We could.
You could have a poker table.
Yeah.
You know, the whole
bag of beer.
Yeah. You had a, what do they call it? The playpen for the kids.
Yeah, we had a playpen one day on the front of the boat.
Yeah, I mean, you could have all this stuff, you know.
Playpen and still plenty of room for five people to fish.
Yeah, it's, okay. Yeah, don't you know, hey, okay, there we go, all right. Yeah, we are back here. No, we're doing... No, wait a minute. This isn't a Youper show, is it? Okay.
No. What's it's almost cold enough.
Yeah, it's like 68 degrees. It's 68.9 or 67. Yeah, 67.9. It's almost, I mean, I just got an email from a guy who showed me all the snow they got is 25 degrees. He lives up in Minnesota. And I've gotten some emails and pictures from a lot of friends around frankettfishandfranks.com, just like the website. Just Frank at and Fish and Franks and .com, and you know, I had to email him back going, well, you know, it's not perfect here either, it's only 68, it could be 75, that would be so much better.
Yeah. I enjoy watching wintertime from down here.
Well, it really, you know, this is a really, really tough time of year down here. I'm sorry, but if you're up north and it's 25 degrees out, you know, you should turn on the heat, you know.
Yeah, and here,
but down here, should I have a little heat? Should I have a little AC?
High 50s, low 60s in the morning, and then by 10, 11 o'clock, you're back up to 80.
Yeah, so do I turn on the heat? Do I turn on the air conditioning? Do I just, you know, open the window? There's so many decisions to be made when you live down here.
You see, we layer our clothes just like people up north do. People up north put their clothes on in layers and leave them on. We put them on in layers so we can take them off as the day progresses.
Right. You start off with, you know, and that's actually a pretty good point, because I will tell you, doing all the charters, I did it in hundreds or thousands of charters, and one of the things that I always notice, people come down from up north and it's 60 degrees out, and they show up at the dock in shorts and t-shirt.
And a tank top.
And flip-flops, and you're like, guys, you're going to freeze. Oh, it's 60. I just came from minus 25. Florida has the coldest 60 degrees in the world.
Yes, it
does. When you get on a boat...
I know it sounds silly.
And you're traveling 25 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour in a boat, 90% of the time, the guys were shaking so bad after the first mile or so that I would have to stop and give them my jackets. And now I'm the wuss Florida guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm taking off, okay, here's my raincoat, here's my jacket, and I'm end up in a shirt because they're unprepared. And
it's
something about the humidity and being a foot off the water.
A lot of it's the humidity.
And then you add that breeze to it. Oh, my God, is it cold.
It's not very often that you do 30, 40 miles an hour with your whole body exposed to the weather.
That's true.
You know, you don't get it unless you're a motorcycle rider.
Right, and even then you're kind of crouched up. But on the boat, it's just being on that very close layer to the water.
Exactly.
And something happens.
Exactly.
And, you know, if people think I don't understand... When I was young, I lived in northern Wisconsin, and that's, don't you know, I know how to be up there, okay. My God, I could do that. I'd get on my motorcycle, and we'd be riding up to the lake up there to do a little crappie fishing. And
oh, you guys are used to it with the snowmobiles.
Well, I would be out. It'd get 30, 35 degrees. I'd be on my motorcycle in a flannel shirt.
Sure,
you know,
but it's
because
dry.
It was minus 40, you know, or minus 30 for a week, and then all of a sudden it hits 35, 40 degrees, and you're like, oh, God, this is hot.
Yeah, my uncle noticed it. Yeah, he's lived in Albuquerque for the past 20 years riding a motorcycle, and he says, you know, the temperature's not that much different, but it's so much more pleasurable to ride a motorcycle here in Florida because of the humidity.
Oh, yeah, it blows.
It's like... a nice cool breeze.
It's like a swamp cooler.
Yeah, it's like a swamp cooler.
You know, I bought swamp coolers from the store and find out they don't work in Florida.
Not worth
it's
a damn.
It's the same as a fan.
Yes.
I mean, there's so much humidity in the air adding to it. If you go to Arizona, a swamp cooler works great because you get a moisture in the air. And you're sitting in Arizona, well, yeah. Nevada, whatever. And
yeah, they
the
work
wind
great.
Blows. It's like someone putting a hairdryer in
right.
your face.
Right.
You put a little moisture in it. Yeah, it's nice, but...
No, and it's, you know, aren't you supposed to refill these things? They never lost their water because there's so much humidity in the air that it doesn't evaporate, and then you end up with stagnant, stinky water.
Yeah, it was. Then the swamp coolers in Florida are just a waste of money. But anyway, now that we've discussed the weather, we're thinking about having a polar vortex crisis sale in December, considering that, because the polar vortex is going to end life as we know it. You know, it's either that or going to be the El Nino or something, you know.
It's always something.
We did that 12-21-12.
Ebola is not off the list yet.
Yeah, well, we did the 12-21-12, the end of the world sale.
Right.
And that was a great thing, because when you bought it, the warranties were good either till the end of the world or normal time.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't, you know, but you had the option that basically if the world ended, your warranty would have been forever.
Right, right.
You know, that was good. So
where else do you get a lifetime forever warranty?
Exactly. You know, right till the world ended. But it didn't end. I was so disappointed.
No, it didn't. Like you said, it could be.
I should have been working for the power company on 12-21-12. Because if I would have been working for FP&L, I would have just, at midnight, I would have shut the power off. Just for about 10 seconds.
It would have been worth getting fired from that job.
I would have lost my job, but
for
10 seconds at midnight, 12-21-12, I would have turned the damn power up just so everybody, I mean, it would have caused heart attacks, panics, all this, but that's natural selection. Who cares, you know?
That would have been getting rid of your week.
Yeah, you know, it would have been worth it. Okay, you're fired, all right, but I had a blast.
I think that's what happened with the gas prices. You noticed how high the gas went up from that time of year. From that point on till now, gas has been just through the roof, and I think that's the problem. That they sat back that next day and said, crap, we got to keep making it.
Yeah. We don't get, the world didn't end, and now we got to still make gas. But, you know, I don't know. Anyway, fishing around the area has been pretty good. Yes, this is a fishing show. I forgot to tell you guys. Yes.
It's been getting better and better out there. Fish are starting to move up from the intercoastal, starting to get onto the flats.
That water's in that low to mid-70s,
it's actually a lot lower than that. It was around 70. Out in the intercoastal, up on the east side, it was about 68.
Yeah, 68 to 72, perfect king mackerel temperatures.
I like it when it gets back down below 75.
Yeah.
Because the temperature on my graph starts working again. For some odd reason, it doesn't like to read over 70. If the water temperature is over 75, it reads from 32 below up to 178 degrees.
It just says, it's too hot, I don't want to deal with it. Yeah, I quit, yes.
No, I was actually reading 68, and I thought it was going kerfluky again until I got out the next day on somebody else's boat, and it said 68 on the east side, too. So,
oh, by the way, this is Captain Kale in the other chair, and Captain Kale is a charter boat captain and one of our fishing instructors. So you can hire him to go on his boat, and he'll take you out fishing, you and your family. And he's got, you know, the Queen Mary of the monster boat. So if you've got a whole family, you want to bring, you know, you got five or six people, it's no problem on that. Or you can hire him to go on your boat. And you've been doing a lot of instructional trips this year.
Yeah, there's been a real big uptick with that. I don't know if the word's starting to get around or we're having more people that are retiring. And I really think it's more people are retiring. All the people that have waited for the past 5 years to retire while the economy was in the crapper, they've started to now make their retirement and make their move down here. And that's what most of them have been. Yeah, I just retired and came down.
And the thing it's hard about, when I go to a new area, I went to Titusville the very first time to go fishing over there, and beautiful area, I love Titusville, but it took me a full day out there. I caught one fish the first day. I caught about five the second day. Now, the third day I did pretty good, but no matter where you go, and I mean, it's basically the same thing we do here. It's not that different, but I had to find out what action the fish wanted, what lures they wanted, where they were, all these other things. And I already knew all the basics. But when you come to a new area and you're going to retire here, hiring somebody to show you where to go and what to do is putting you a year to 2 years ahead of the...
And not to mention, but you're coming from probably freshwater, deep freshwater, to shallow saltwater.
Right.
Completely different environment.
Now, if you're moving to Englewood, you're going to go out, you're going to fish in the Gulf.
Sure.
Or, you know, South Fort Myers or whatever. But when you're in the Cape Coral, Fort Myers, Cape Coral, Pine Island, Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, Eljabine, you know, all these places in here on the harbor, the first thing is don't buy a boat when you come, and don't buy a boat before you've been on the harbor a couple of times.
We preach this, you know, preach it. And people still, and it's really hard to blame them.
Well,
they've retired. I don't have to work anymore. But now I can do what that bumper sticker says.
Right.
Let's fish 5 days and work too.
Yeah.
Well, and they're excited to buy a boat. They want to get out there on the water.
And they spend all that money on the wrong one.
Right.
That is the biggest problem. Because everybody comes down, they say, okay, I want a boat that's small enough for the harbor and big enough for the Gulf.
Right.
And it's great theory, but direct translation, too small for the Gulf, too big for the harbor.
Exactly.
And if you've got a cuddy cabin in it, if you buy a cuddy cabin boat and you live in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, or whatever, think about World War II just for a minute, where they would put people in little tiny enclosed boxes for punishment. If you're putting a cabin on the boat and it's not big enough for air conditioning, a kitchen, a stateroom, and all that, don't get it. Get an open boat.
Yeah.
Open center console, because in a cuddy cabin on Charlotte Harbor, that's cruel and unusual.
Yes, it is, because it's hot.
Right,
and
it ends
cramped.
Up a storage thing.
That's all it is. It's a storage place.
That gets moldy, and you got to clean it up.
It's a really classy tackle box is what it turns into.
Yes, that's exactly what it
time.
Is. And then
check out the new upholstery in my Plano tackle box.
Yes, here it is.
It's got a full head.
But the neat part about it is when you're coming down and looking at boats, Englewood is a whole different story, because it's basically saltwater. Marco Island, Naples down there, that's saltwater.
Right.
Up here, it's brackish water. So an inboard-outboard motor is in very little use here, because the problem with it is, A, the brackish water eats it more than saltwater, more than freshwater.
Yes.
I've seen it eat through an outdrive in six months.
It is rough on aluminum. Whether it be fittings or hulls, you will see a lot of your galvanic corrosion is magnified in brackish water.
It's
and
amazing.
Galvanic corrosion is when you have two dissimilar metals.
I love
basically
your big words.
Weld themselves together because of a saltwater reaction. But the brackish water is actually worse on the galvanic corrosion than the salt is.
It's amazing how bad it is.
Yeah.
I've never dealt with anything like it, because in saltwater, you can use an inboard outboard. And the reason we don't use inboards here is because if you want to go back on the flats, you just cannot do it.
You can't do it.
It's
you
not
cross out your inboards, cross out your jet drives.
Well, the problem with a jet drive, it'll run really, really skinny, but you suck all the sand up.
Exactly.
A, the weeds plug the screen, and B, if that doesn't happen, you're sucking a lot of sand into it. And if you've got the money to replace it every few years, no problem.
Yep.
But the big thing about it is an inboard outboard does not like idling with the IO attachment tilted up.
No.
They're not big on that. That U-joint on it does not like anywhere but down. It works good in the trim positions, but as soon as you put it in the tilt position, it is not happy.
Nope.
So you can take an outboard and you can tilt it any direction you want. It's fine. It doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
So that's the reason we don't use the IOs, because they won't run in the tilted position. And if you want to get back in the shallows to do what part of the year 80% of the fishing is back there, and 20% of the year the best fishing is in the middle of the harbor.
Right.
Or let's say 70-30. But you just can't with those. They make decent ride-around boats, but they have to be on a lift.
Exactly.
Got to be on a lift. You can't leave an IO in the water.
You can't leave it on the... It's too much to trailer. They're
usually you can put it on a trailer, but...
Yeah, but it's a pain in the butt. I mean, dealing with a 30-foot boat that's IO is nice when you're 30, 40 years old.
Yeah, I want something... Me, an ideal boat is 18 to 21, 18 to 22 foot. Because most of the time when you hit 23 and 24, they're getting into offshore styles.
Yeah.
Depending on the manufacturer, if it's a regular flats boat or made for inside, some type of bay boat, then you can get into the 23s, maybe even 24s. But in most manufacturers, that's the split between their inshore boats and their offshore boats. So 18 to 21, 18 to 22, and fiberglass end to end. I want to hit it with a pressure washer and be done with it.
Yeah. I don't want to oil teak.
No. And I don't want to clean the mold and all the cracked padding.
I don't want to polish aluminum. I don't want to polish stainless steel. No.
Now, the one thing I do always tell people, aluminum hulls work great down here in the saltwater. They're light. They're a little noisy, but they still work great. If you have a welded hull, no problem. It's just a welded hull. It's going to be okay. But if you have a riveted aluminum boat,
right,
you need to install zinc tabs up against the hull.
Below
the water
line. The water line.
Yes, exactly. And if you put the zincs on the boat, the ones in your motor are there to protect the power head.
Right.
And when you see your zinc, that's that little fin that's right behind the propeller. When you see that starting to get pockmarks in it and stuff, replace
it. Time to replace it.
Don't wait till it's gone, because every bit after those first pockmarks, it's eating a little bit of the zinc and it's eating a little bit of your power head. Power heads are made out of aluminum. They're the next thing that goes. And people's motors fail because they don't keep the zincs up.
Right. And that's why those rivets in aluminum boats fail. That's your galvanic corrosion. You've got
an
aluminum hull
metal
touching a different metal. The rivets are very rarely made out of aluminum. It's going to be an aluminum alloy that has something else in it.
Well, they got to be soft to compress.
Right.
So it's the softest metal on the boat, and all of a sudden you're going along, and you got this little tiny leak, and you have no idea where it comes from.
Exactly.
And then you got another one. And so you put a zinc on the back of the boat, you're all good. Just replace the zincs, and it will never touch the rivets.
Yep.
Now, I do that when I'm running the boats in freshwater as well, because
it doesn't hurt. It's simple, cheap protection.
Yeah, and you just need two stainless steel screws, nuts, bolts, and, slap it on the hull below the water line. I put the waterproofing on the inside so that the zinc actually hits hard against the hull.
Right, right. It helps it ground out.
Yeah, it's got to be grounded and touching the hull. Is this a fishing show? Sort of.
Well, it's kind of turned into a boating show, but that's okay. This weekend, we're hitting boat show season, so...
Mm.
You know, we're going to be down at the Fort Myers Boat Show.
Yep, Thursday, Friday, Saturday this week, we're at the Fort Myers Boat Show, and they got a huge, it is the biggest boat show of the boat shows. It's the granddaddy of them all, longest running boat show, and it really extends all along the water from, what's that, Colonial?
Yeah.
41, all the way over to Old 41.
I'll tell you what, I've been to a lot of boat shows, and I'm always impressed with what you can find at the Fort Myers Boat Show. Sure, you can go down to the Miami Boat Show and see every boat made under the sun, and you're not going to even be interested in 99.99% of them. And you can walk through the entire Fort Myers Boat Show, and that's a nice boat.
Right.
That's a nice boat, too. Wait, that one's a nice boat.
That one we saw.
From pontoon boats
I wish
to
I had
shallow
money.
Draft boats to offshore boats.
Remember that one that was outside our booth last year?
Oh that thing was amazing.
I don't even remember what it was, but it was way too expensive for me.
The Bennington.
Yeah.
Pontoon boat. I think they said it was either 35 or 38 foot.
Yeah, 100.
Which is a whole lot of pontoon boat to begin with.
$165,000.
Oh, now, it had
a built-in bar.
A full bar. It had a second level with a water slide.
Oh yeah.
It was
I could have moved on to it.
It was the ridiculousness of pontoon boats. But I mean you're not gonna go to a boat show, most other boat shows, and see things.
Oh no, they got million dollar boats down there.
Yeah.
Plus on the other end they were building little wooden skiffs. They had a wood building contest to build little wooden John boats.
And the guy beside us had the fold-up boats.
Yeah. So whether you wanted a fold-up boat or a couple million dollars on a boat, they had it all. It was really cool.
Yeah, but we'll be there. We'll have our tackle display out there. We'll have shirts. We'll have fishing seminars.
We got fishing seminars. Yep. Just look Fort Myers Boat Show, and it comes right up. But it's a good one for this coast. If you were going to go to one this year, that's the one I would go to.
Yeah, if you've come down here and you're looking for a boat, don't go look to buy. You can, but go look.
two charter boat captains and two different captains.
Right.
Nothing to do with the captain. It has to do with you want to ride on a couple of different boats. And you want to see, you know, like Kale uses a big 24 skiff, and it's a great boat. I mean, it really is. I love those boats.
It's a great, if you're a hardcore fisherman, if you're going to go out there,
captain.
If you're going to go out there and fish, and just fish, if you're going to go out there and do it all year round, regardless of weather, regardless of water depth, that's a great boat. If you're taking your wife out there every day and she likes padded seats,
well, and just creature the difference comforts, between a V-hull and a flat hull, there's a lot of difference in the boats.
This isn't the boat for you.
No, but hire two different captains.
Right, that's why get a captain that has a different boat than the last guy you took out.
Yeah,
and check out
because you're
what
actually
he's got.
You're not doing it for the fish catching. Not that you don't catch fish, but I'm just saying. What you're doing it for is to get information. I try and tell people, you were smart enough to do well enough in life where you're retiring, you're moving to Florida, you know, you're getting your house, you're doing
exactly.
All this. But how many good decisions did you ever make with no personal information?
Right.
Without firsthand information, how can you make a good decision?
You know, why did you move to Florida to begin with? Because you visited down here.
You're like,
just like
what's
everybody
not
else.
To like?
You
it's
came
gorgeous.
Down here to Disneyland. It was kind of nice weather. Then maybe you had some other family move down and you visited them. And then before you know it, you're wintering down here and then you retire and move down here completely. Nobody on the planet throws the dart at the map. It lands on Port Charlotte and they say, okay, let's go.
No, usually you know somebody.
Yeah, you know somebody. You've been here before. Like you said, you have a little bit of knowledge behind that decision.
Yeah, but you've got to have a little bit of information. Hire two different captains, go out in two different boats, get an idea of what you like and where you want to go.
Yeah.
And you're moving to Englewood, you're going to be fishing in the Gulf a lot. You're moving Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, Elgin, you know, our area over here. You've got from, like, my house out to the Gulf and back is 56 miles.
Right.
And from Port Charlotte, it's about a high 40 round trip. So you got to figure you got 100 miles in before you get to the Gulf, and then you're going to want to do another 15, 20, 30 miles out. So add another 30 to 60 miles and plus a little running around. So now we're talking, you know, 150-mile average trip.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money if the boat burns a gallon a mile.
Yes. That's a lot of money.
That's 150 gallons
go down
times
to your,
four.
Go down to your boat ramps in the afternoon, from 2 to 4 in the afternoon. And talk to the charter captains that come in. You don't even have to take them out on a trip. After you've taken a few out, go down to the boat ramps and talk. Look at his boat. Look at the layout, because everybody's boat's different. Now, start asking him questions. What do you like about the boat? Because we would be more than happy to tell you what we love about our boat. Ask him what he doesn't like about his boat, because we are more than happy to complain about what we don't like about our boat, because we have to deal with it daily. Now, stay away from the guys.
Captain complaining. Now, this just boggles my mind.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. That ever happens?
Ignore the guys that have the name brand of the boat on their wrap. Because they're going to tell you it's great because they were handed that boat. Get the guys that aren't sponsored by the boat company.
Not only that, but if they went through all the trouble of wrapping it, they've got so much money tied up into it, they just don't want to admit there's problems.
This is true.
Anyway, let's go fishing for a while.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to have to mark this. Once you get 23 minutes in, we're going to talk about fishing.
All right.
So I'll mark that on the lead into this. All right. Basically, the trout with this cold weather moving up like crazy.
And the trout have been moving up good even before it got cold. It's just going to help spurn them and turn them on. The trout have been a little tough on the east side because there's been a ton of white bait in there. They've had plenty to eat. That white bait's gone. The cold front pushed them out. So now these trout are starting to get hungry. So shrimp are going to start paying off. Start fishing your artificials. All that's going to pay off now on the east side for trout.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, the east side, and it seems like the further south you get, you get down around Two Pines, south of Burnt Store, you've got some nice trout down there, a lot of small ones, but you actually can find some keepers.
Yeah.
But you get just north of Pirate Harbor is your best mix of keeper and small ones right now.
Yeah, yeah. From Pirate Harbor to Alligator Creek has been my best bet for keeper trout.
Yeah, if you get inside Pirate Harbor, you got a ton of little ones. You know, you're going to catch and release a bunch of fish. And keep in mind, trout's a very, very hardy catch and release fish. Done properly.
That's the key word.
If you have wet hands, wet gloves, wet rags, as soon as you touch a trout with a dry hand, a dry glove, a dry rag, you've killed that fish.
Yep.
He's going to die in 3 or 4 days or a week or 2 weeks, or you're going to catch a trout with big sores all over him. That was your fault.
Yeah, so. And there's no reason to touch him. You can tell if he's undersized.
Yeah, but I mean,
grab that hook, pop it out. No reason to even take them out of the water.
Dip your hand in the live well or in the shrimp bucket. Just get your hand wet. Stick it over the side of the boat. Get your hand wet. Use a wet rag, wet gloves. Nothing dry should touch a fish. It sucks the epidermal layer off the fish, otherwise known as slime. And then the bacteria gets in. And just like us, if you were out there and you're going to work, you know, whatever your job is, and you didn't have a spot on your body with an epidermal layer.
Yeah, if you wanted to work without any skin, you wouldn't last long.
Yeah, so anyway, let's go back to mangrove snapper. Now,
mangrove snapper
was the big fish all summer long. I mean, not the big fish, but I mean the rock and catches.
About. Yeah. And they were big. Yeah. There were a lot of guys catching big mangrove snapper. They're still hot. You just have to know where to look for them now. They've kind of moved off the flats. You'll still see your little guys out there. You gotta get into your deeper holes to find your bigger ones.
Okay, so what are we talking about? Are we talking about the reef?
The bridges, the reefs, any deep cuts. Deep cuts with high current, you're going to find mangrove snapper.
So we're looking for something with at least 3 feet of water in it, 4 feet of water.
Yeah, 3 or 4 feet of water that's moving well.
I just wanted to translate that for our Canadian friends, our English friends, the German guys, and the people in Australia.
1 to 1.2 meters of water with at least 3 kilometers of current.
There you go. That'll work. Hi to all the people in Australia. There's... actually, a growing number of people in Australia listening to this ridiculous program. We're up to about 75 people in Australia listening right now.
Nice.
Austria, different, no kangaroo. We're only doing about 10, but Australia, actually, we have a pretty good following there. And good day, mate. I don't know any other Australian. But every Australian I've ever met all is crazy. Actually nuts. The most fun people on the planet.
I agree with that.
The most fun people you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
And one day I got to go fishing there. That's my goal is, I got to get my teeth fixed. Once my teeth are done,
it's I'm putting one place
money away to
I've,
go to
I've
Australia.
I've always wanted to get to.
Alaska and Australia
are my
two goals.
I care less about the fishing. I just want to go and visit.
I want to hang out with some Australian people for a while.
Yeah.
I want to go in a bar and drink with some Australians. I want to see if I'm man enough to keep up. Because everyone I've met here, no, I wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I wasn't. I want to see if they're more of a wuss when they get home.
Yeah.
You know. All right. Anyway, getting back to it, the trout moving in real good. East side's good. West side's got some decent trout on it, but not huge numbers. You got a spot school here and a spot
well,
school
we're
there.
Still dealing, we're still dealing with water quality over there on the west side. You know, it's going to get better as the winter moves on. And here in a month, that side of the harbor is going to be loaded with trout just as much as the east side is.
Now, snook fishing is everywhere right now.
Yeah, snook are doing excellent.
If you can get up into Coral Creek, you're going to find tons of smaller snook up there. And you all right, Barb?
Yep.
Okay. As usual, you're walking through the store, you knock something over. I love our new look in here with all the new rod racks, and everything's in branded racks, but it's taking up a lot more room
There's no
than
room.
We thought.
Yeah.
So we've got to do something about that. Can anybody get me another 100? You know, I'd like 8,000 more square feet.
Yeah.
I'll take 100, though. Actually, the room we're in now, in the next few months, will be retail space. We're moving into the next room because I can't have this not retail. We're out of space.
Yeah.
Gotta have it. So anyway, snook fishing all over the place. Coral Creek is loaded with snook. Now, very few keepers, mostly undersized. It is a great nursery for snook.
Yes.
Bone SL, Zara Spook, if you want to learn how to throw topwater for snook,
that's the ticket.
Get into Coral Creek and throw in the Bone SL. You're going to have a good day. You're going to catch snook. You're going to have a lot of fun. You need a small electric trolling motor or a big electric trolling motor and or a nice wind drift. But you got to keep moving and very slowly work your way along the shorelines. But you will catch enough fish to just have a spectacular day. And if you've never caught fish in a topwater, the one thing you always have to do is wait. That's the hardest thing in the world. The most crazy thing in the world. Hard to believe that humans are so fast. We are a very quick species. And when you see the fish strike and set the hook, you pop that out of his mouth. You have to wait to feel the pull of the fish.
Exactly.
And that Bone SL, that Little Zara Spook Jr. Bone SL, is rocking them in Coral Creek right now. But getting back up into Port Charlotte, the whole flat across from Port Charlotte Beach is doing well.
The flats are doing well. East side is doing well. Your wind-blown points on a good windy day. You're stuck behind the bar anyways in that wind, so make the best of it. Use it to your advantage. Start fishing those wind-blown points, and a lot of snook hanging on those.
Right. Fishandfranks.com, and you're right about the wind. On fishandfranks.com, click the weather and tide button, go to live weather. Right now, at this moment, on the intercoastal, it's blowing 15 miles an hour, gusting to 17 out of the west-southwest.
Yep.
And it gives you everything right there. It's live weather from the Gasparilla Drawbridge. And just letting you know, so that's real time. But we do have 15 mile an hour west-northwest. Yeah. The only thing I don't like about the west-northwest makes it hard to hide.
It does. Your west-northwest and your southeast.
They're tough to hide from.
Are the toughest winds out there.
East and west we can hide from. East is easy. North is easy.
Yeah.
But when it comes out of the west, we have to get across the harbor to get there. So you end up running along in front of Hog Island trying to skip across the Myakka to get around that west side.
Yep.
So anyway, talked about snook a little bit. Redfish seems to be the biggie.
It does. We still have a lot of the big oversized reds out there that are schooled up. The little guys... This is my favorite time of year for redfish. They actually fight like redfish now.
Yeah? Expand a little on that.
Well, they get hot. I mean, we're at the southernmost of their range, okay? It's no different. I mean, they run from here all the way up to Massachusetts.
Yeah, I mean, long ways.
Think about how you were your first summer down here. You didn't want to do a whole lot. It was hot.
I was an iron worker back then. I was doing steel work. So I actually got here coming down I-75 tying steel on bridges.
Yeah.
And you're working with iron all day. You're on a flat concrete deck or wood deck. I mean, the thermometer on the deck would easily
hit 128. That steel gets hot.
Yeah. And so my first summer down here was spent on bridge decks tying steel. That's one of the reasons I'm really happy being Fisher Frank. I love my job. I don't really make any more money, but I don't have to tie steel.
It's a lot more comfortable.
I mean, putting 200 pounds of iron on your shoulder and walking around with it all day, then bending over and putting it in place. That's double tough. My hat's off to anybody still, you know, my age and still can do iron work.
And it's no different for the redfish in the summertime. It's tough for them. On top of the water temperatures, you also have a big lack of oxygen in the water because of your high water temperatures, and it makes them really lethargic. They don't fight really tough. We got into a school, we sat there and pulled I think 30 15 inch redfish out from underneath one bush the other day, and
we got four other captains we said all the talking thing. About the same thing.
We said the same thing with every fish. Ooh, that one's a keeper. Just for that initial hit and that initial run, yep, that one's a keeper. And then you get it to the boat and he's only 15 inches. But they're starting to fight better because that water's cooling down. It's holding more oxygen.
Well, I'm going to agree with you because I don't care what creature you are on the planet. When the water temp, and like we joke about it, but Florida's perfect right now, guys. I'm telling you right now. The sun is shining. It's the breeze is blowing. The air temp is, we're around 70 degrees. I mean, you don't get any better than that. I mean, it is beautiful. And you, if you're willing to put up with some bumpy waves to get back to a secluded spot, and I mean, it's not like it's blowing 6-foot seas out there. They're just chop. So
yeah.
I got to tell you, it is perfect down here right now. And if you are listening in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Montana, Canada, or anywhere in the Northeast.
Yeah, if you look out your window and your grass is white, not green, you're who we're talking to.
I'm sorry. It's really beautiful, and it really is. It's just perfect here right now. But getting back to the redfish, it seems like they're bunching. And I don't know if it's a winter bunch or if it's just the little ones who are now big enough for us to notice them that weren't big enough to notice a little while ago. Well, but there is a ton of bunches of redfish, and one bush has them all.
Yeah, it's the wintertime crab hatch is what does it. The water temperature is down.
Water temperature is perfect. The air temperature is
everything's
perfect.
Yeah. And you see those birds out there working the edges of the water. We have a crab hatch that happens this time of year, and the redfish are taking advantage of it. And absolutely, it's like Golden Corral.
Yeah, I mean,
you're going to jam the place every night because it's a big old buffet.
Yeah, so it's really, right now, it's an excellent fishing time. Now, I will say, if you're up there and you want to have a little bit of fun, I would use monofilament, but I would bring your crappie rod if you're coming. You know, your 5.5-6 foot, you know, the
definitely
rod you use on
definitely
your crappie. And I like 2- and 4-pound test mono on it. We throw a little bit of 20 on the end of it. And this hurts to say, it really does, but I would use a circle hook on the little redfish. That really hurt. Having use a circle hook come out of my mouth, just, it hurts me to my soul. But,
well, it's a good idea because we're seeing a lot of 12-inch snook mixed in redfish.
I've never seen a creature, when you get a redfish that's under 18 inches, when he's 15 and down, that redfish will bite your bait, chew it, swallow it, digest it, and start to excrete it
before you can
set the hook.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, literally, it goes in one end, and it's a direct shootout. I mean, all of a sudden, and so it's the one fish out there that even I use circle hooks on. It's the only fish I like using circle hooks on. But it does make sense. And it's kind of a pain to get a circle hook out. I hate removing a circle hook from a fish. It's absolutely ridiculous. You got a hook that has to move in a circular motion to get it out.
Right.
And the only way you can do that is to tear it around until you get it below his jaw to get it out.
Right.
If it's up by his head, you can't get the thing out. I've done more damage to fish with a circle hook than any other thing I've ever done. And it hurts me to my soul.
They are hard on trout.
They're hard on every fish. Circle hooks suck, except on little redfish, because it's the only way. I'm quick with a rod. I'm actually pretty good, folks. I'm a good fisherman, and I can't set a hook quick enough for a little redfish not to swallow it. I don't.
No, it's tough.
Yeah,
I switched. I actually switched to a jig head, and I had it out there 10 hits. Nope, can't do it.
No,
too slow.
Too slow. You're not quick enough to catch up to a redfish. Bite, chew, swallow, digest,
done.
Poop. You
done.
Know, it's. Yep. I mean, you're going to set the hook, and it's already half out his buns. You
yeah,
know,
it
like,
is.
My God,
that's a little exaggeration,
folks.
But I mean, it's fishing,
down his throat.
I love fishing for those little redfish. They're usually schooled up. They're aggressive and willing to eat. They don't have to be right up underneath the mangroves. They're small enough where they'll hang out from the mangroves and go after food. It's where you start seeing weird redfish. You know, that little 15-inch will be the one with 37 spots on it.
Right.
Or no spots at all.
But this is where I want my crappie rod. Now, definitely if you're coming down, bring your normal 8 to 17, 10 to 20 rod, because there's so many big fish.
Yeah,
there's
still big ones mixed
in.
You
have to have a real fishing rod. But bring that crappie rod with you and just have a ball with some of these fish. I mean, it's dramatic fighting. And if you can handle a really good sized snook. I've spent years learning how to handle a rod and reel, getting myself to go from 15, 20 pound test all the way down to 2 pound mono to land fish on. The only fish down here you can't do it on light line is a jack crevalle. That's the only fish you cannot catch on light line.
Yeah.
you get back in PGI right now, there's so many big schools of jacks, and going up and down the bar on the east side, you'll see them busting.
Yeah.
But you get a jack, when you got your little rod, you've just lost all your line, and maybe if the line's tied on really good to the reel, it take the reel right up the end of the rod with it.
Yeah.
I mean, those fish are amazing.
I've been having trouble with Spanish mackerel in my trout holes. And I'm not talking little ones. I mean, we're catching 30-inch Spanish mackerel mixed in with these trout.
Really?
You'll be sitting there and just nice and... You know, expecting that bobber to just slowly sink under the water, and then just whammo!
Spanish mackerel back on the flats?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Back in now, behind the bar.
They're catching them in the canals now.
Yeah.
And remember last year we went through all that with the Spanish mackerel in the canals? Now they're back on the flats. These are strange times, folks.
Yeah, they are. Well, we're starting to see our another push of glass minnows out of the canals.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting to see, and that's perfect because now
if you're wondering what a glass minnow is, you look it up in the book. It's called a bay anchovy.
But bay anchovy, silver sides,
yeah,
pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, but it's bay anchovy. That's what we call glass minnows because you can actually see through the things.
Yeah, yeah, and that's really all the food they have from Pirate Harbor up.
So there's no more bait on the harbor
because
weeks ago I was out and it was just
Friday,
flat loaded.
Friday, flat loaded. Monday, gone. I saw one little school swim by the boat as I was coming in, and they were all carrying Albuquerque or bust signs. So they were headed out.
I'm going to Texas.
But yeah, that's. But
I don't know why, because all my exes live in. Never mind.
It's expected with the cold front.
Yeah, I mean, when the water chills off, they're going to get out.
They got to find warmer water. Now, Alligator Creek Reef. Loaded with bait. Throw your net there. I dare you.
Yeah, I dare you. Come on. We got cast nets for $200. We'll sell you. Forget that $60, that $20 one or the $60 one. We'll sell you a nice $200 cast net. Take it out to Alligator Creek.
It catches them on the reef. Catches them on the reef better.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll do it. Definitely sabiki time on the reefs. Throw a sabiki and you can still catch some. Try and find the least expensive sabikis you can get. We've got them for around $1. And don't use a real heavy weight. I always recommend with sabiki half, three-quarter, one-ounce weights.
Yeah,
but over there, it's a quarter ounce,
quarter
half
ounce
at the most. I usually use a quarter.
It's only 12 feet deep.
And so I want to jig it across there. And the tiniest, cheapest ones, because you mess up for just a second, you're snagged.
Yeah. Plus, there's still a lot of big fish running around, well, bigger fish running around the reef. There's still Spanish mackerel. There's still juvenile cobia in there.
Yeah. Oh, the cobia fishing right
now. They will hit
us. Isn't it great?
Yeah.
I know, Mr. Cobia, anti-cobia.
It's not that. It's the last 2 years here have been incredible for cobia.
Right.
We're starting to make the panhandle.
You look so depressed.
I know.
I mean, the last 2 years have been just incredible. Yeah. Cobia, I can't take it.
What
do you love, cobia?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
We're starting to make the panhandle look bad when it comes
like
to cobia.
Like, I care if they look bad?
No,
where's the downside? Happy the hell up.
Well, I think the downside is you're always going to pay for it.
Okay.
One way or another, you're going to pay for it.
All right, Mr. Other Shoe.
What are we seeing drop at the same time we're seeing cobia go up?
I have no idea.
Flounder.
No, we have not. June 1995, 18 inches of rain, 2 hours, massive flooding, horrific loss of habitat,
but
everything else.
2 years ago, flounder were ridiculous. I caught more flounder 2 years ago than I did in the last 12 years combined.
Because of the flood of June in 1995. Everything's about history. Everything you do is because of what happened before you did that. And we were just starting to get flounder back, you know, 3 years ago, just starting to get good population up. And they went nuts. We got a bunch. We caught a bunch. And it's still cyclic. I mean, it's still going to cycle through, and we're seeing more flounder this year, but we've still got a while before we get that flounder hatchery back, and it's just not there yet. I mean, it's been a long, long time, but, you know, this is almost pushing 20 years, but...
Well, it took almost 10 for the snapper to come back after Hurricane Charlie, so...
Right. So, but you know, it's
what's with the cobia then? I mean, what's bringing... I didn't expect...
You think it's like the Hatfields and McCoys? Do you think that these cobia are fighting with them flounder?
Well, I do think that they eat the same foods. They take the same water. You're always... We only have so much food... available in our heart, or if more fish move in,
I'm just
going to
call you
full.
This, I think you just couldn't get more wrong. No, I just don't think you're on
the
right track.
That's not the first time you said that.
But usually, somewhere in your madness, there is a good point to it. But I just don't think that's one of them, because they're so different as a species. Everything eats the same food.
Why are we a cobia magnet all of a sudden? I thought this year
maybe
was
they like
drop
eating
off.
A little flounder.
Well, that could be too. That's what we were using to catch them. We were using those little flounder hoagies.
Yeah, yeah.
And wrecking them.
And it could be that we have so many cobia here, and they are decimating the population of juvenile flounder. That is a definite possibility.
I expected cobia to fall this year. Because of the...
It's going up.
Yeah, and it's going up. And I wholeheartedly expected this to be a poor cobia season because of the lack of bait. And it didn't slow them down.
One of the best cobia years I ever remember. Now, if you're sitting up north and you don't know what a cobia is...
Just move down here. It's worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it. Okay.
It's worth it.
But
I know you think your walleye is the best fish on the planet.
No.
And coming from northwest Pennsylvania, I thought the same thing, too, until I had cobia.
Yeah, cobia is one of the best eating fish you're ever going to run into. And the fastest, one of the fastest growing, only mahi-mahi is more prolific and grows faster than a cobia.
Right.
And they're just absolutely amazing fish. And legal size is 33 to the fork.
Right.
Tells you how big these fish can get. But 70, 90, 150 pounds.
The mahi-mahi is good eating, but you can't catch mahi-mahi off the 41 bridge.
No, you can catch cobia. But the thing you want to picture is a catfish. A big, long, muscled-up catfish. Say a 3.5-4 foot long catfish that whose mother had an illicit affair, and one night in a drunken just misadventure ended up mating with a shark.
That's and, exactly what they look like.
I mean, somewhere back in history, there was a lonely shark, a overzealous catfish, and somehow or another they got together and produced this unbelievable fish. I don't know how else to describe it. Part catfish, part shark.
And it's, unfortunately, that's the only way to describe it. I mean, it doesn't really sound nice because catfish and sharks pee through their skin and all the bad juju that goes with both fish.
But if you took the best qualities of both, the tasty meat of the catfish,
the
willingness
the size,
to bite almost anything that moves.
Yes, yes.
And then you take the dramatic fight power, speed, strength of a shark and combine the two best qualities of those fish and you've got a cobia.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. I can't give a reason as to why we have so many of them this time of year.
It's good. It's all good.
Yeah, it's honestly.
And I've
I
never
don't care. See, in my life,
I've literally never heard you more depressed than talking about how great the cobia fishing is. And you were one of the most, you know, I mean, intuit cobia fishermen I've ever met.
Yeah, I am. Don't get me wrong.
So depressed.
I mean,
it's like, oh my god. Okay.
It's just it's really thrown me at how well the cobia population is doing this time of year.
All right. Well, I'm going to throw in a little bit of stuff now. Lemon Bay trout fishing's picking up pretty good at this time. Starting to see some nice sheephead move in. Sheephead's the other one coming in with the cold weather. We're hearing stories, and this is going to be the year on sheephead. If you want to catch some nice sheephead, you're going to start looking now. In the next month, you're going to be catching 14, 16, 18, 20-inch sheephead.
Now, the
and
good news is...
very few things in the world are going to battle you like a 20-inch sheephead.
We have already getting good reports of sheephead inside the PGI canals. That didn't happen last year. They didn't come up into the harbor last year like they usually do.
And this is...
And looks like this year is going to be a banner year.
But last year at this time, the guys were seeing, and I was getting reports, one sheephead here, twos and threes.
Right, right.
This year's five, tens, 15s.
Absolutely.
And a lot of big ones. Now, where they've come from, where they're going, they're usually staging up on the offshore reefs, and we get a lot of reports offshore. They've already come in. And I don't understand why they don't do, why they're not doing the staging thing. They're kind of bypassing the near shore reefs and coming right up to the harbor.
I always end out around the Placida area this time of year, fishing for other fish. We saw it last year this time of year when we were doing that infomercial. I saw it this past week out in Placida. Just thousands and upon thousands of sheepheads in a train coming through Little Gasparilla Pass.
Right.
Just steadily pouring in. And it's always going to happen this time of year. It's always just a matter of whether they come up this far or not, and I think this year, not going to be a problem.
No, I think you're going to have the one of the best years in sheephead we've ever had. And so, and then going down, getting down around Sanibel, some nice trout fishing there in the flats right inside the island on the slow zone there.
Still some good shark fishing down there. A lot of black tips.
Water temp is still 78 down there.
Yeah.
That, you know, 20, 30 miles south, they're still hitting that. Naples is 78 degrees.
Yeah.
Water temp versus our 72. So you got a lot of the sharks down there. They're getting good cobia, got a lot of mackerel. Pompano's a little better down there than up here right now. But some really nice fishing if you want to get down around Sanibel, Captiva, inside or outside of the island. You got some pretty good, a few small tarpon left over there. Getting around Matt Lachey, hearing tons of fish around Matt Lachey right now. Everybody I talk to who's down by Matt Lachey is just excited. The redfish, the snook, the trout, they're all there. And Matt Lachey's just been going crazy. Up in the Peace River, still a little slow. Don't know what. A few little redfish, but a lot of big snook. And it's about the only thing I've really heard a lot about on the Peace River is the big snook.
Well, I expected the big snook up there just because of the amount of water flow and as much flooding as it did. We talked about this at that charter captain's thing that Betty Strogler put on.
Yeah.
The FWC scientist. Well, every time we have big flood years, for some odd reason, we have higher number population of snook and blah, 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 blah. Well, it's because there's food.
Right. There's a lot of food up there.
When you start getting that flooding, when it starts receding, it's washing all kinds of stuff, all kinds of goodies into the water. Stuff that snook usually don't get to see that are swimming on the surface of the water. Frogs, lizards, small mammals, mice.
Oh, yeah.
You don't think a snook won't hit them?
Oh, well, yes, they will. Everything. The one thing I was most surprised at was the armored catfish, the Placostomus.
Armored cat, they love them.
And all the, now, people always say, well, you know, the state kills more snook a year than anybody because they need to sample the otoliths in the head to see how old they are versus how big they are and what's in their stomach and everything else. Right. And when they're up sampling or killing fish, whichever way you want to say it, and it's a good thing. I mean, we ran a shark tournament for many years to kill sharks so that the researchers could get the different body parts out of them and tell the health of the general population. Sometimes you got to do the wrong thing to do the right thing. But the bellies, so many armored catfish in them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they would just sat there and with those fish in front of them so long, somebody opened their mouth up and decided, well, I'll try it.
Yeah.
And
armored catfish, tarpon, number one.
And the snook.
Crayfish, number two.
Really?
Yeah.
Crawdads.
Loving the crawdads.
Wow. You just would never think of that. That one boggles my mind. Well, I just wouldn't think of it.
Go to any place that cleans a lot of fish. Go to Fisherman's Village. Go to Placida. Go to that place that we went out of this past weekend. Any place that has a head boat that goes out.
Right.
Pay attention when he cleans out the fish and throws the scraps back in the water. And look what's down there eating the scraps.
Crabs.
No. Snook.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right. I didn't know where you were going
with
it.
They'll sit there. They'll eat the skin off the fillets. As soon as it touches the water, bang, they eat it.
Well, I can tell you a nasty story from years ago, and I'm talking back during the Great Depression and all that, the, you know, 20s, 30s, and all that, and before. Snook were sold for cat food.
Right.
Because they were unedible. That's right. What people thought. They didn't, until some dumb Yankee came down here and filleted one of them, took the skin off, they figured it was an unedible fish. And they would sit outside where the sewers dumped into the river.
Sure.
And snag them. And
eating brown trout.
Yeah. They would throw them, you know, just with a big gaff hook, stick them and throw them in wagons and haul them over to the cat food factories.
Sure. They're a swimming garbage can.
Oh, yeah. They'll eat anything.
I love catching them. I like eating them. I don't understand why they are regaled as a pristine game fish.
Well, they're people swimming do the same thing cans. With tarpon.
And they're even worse.
A tarpon is not a silver king until it's on the end of your line.
Right.
When it's on the end of your line and it's jumping and doing these unbelievable acrobatics and pulls and everything else, it's the silver king. It's the most amazing fish.
All it is a 200-pound anchovy.
Yeah. Before that, it's a lady fish. The meat is almost unedible. Yep. I mean, I want to tell you, as long as I got 50 cents and there's a burger joint open, I will never eat a tarpon. No. It's never going to happen. You know, whether they were legal to eat or not.
The
legal
only people
to eat,
that eat tarpon are the ones that have to.
Yeah, if you're so poor, you have to eat it.
I mean, they're a food fish in the Amazon because they have to.
Yeah, you don't have any other choice. You're going to eat whatever you have to stay alive. But that's a miserable way to stay alive, eating tarpon.
I'm pretty sure that that Brazilian native would take the burger too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure too. If there was a Mickey D's within running distance, they wouldn't eat tarpon. All right. So anyway, I guess anything else we should cover? We didn't really cover much, but we talked about a lot of stuff.
No, I don't think I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
All right. This is Fish and Frank in the chair, and this is Captain Kale across from me.
Don't forget our fishing club meeting this week.
Oh, it's pretty much booked up, Kale.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, we don't want to talk good about the deal. Fishing club because I don't think there's going to be room for anybody. We were going to be at the Fort Myers Boat Show. If you want to get on some fishing seminars, we'll be at the Fort Myers Boat Show. We're doing 4 fishing seminars a day in Fort Myers at the boat show.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the Luigi's thing, we were booked out of that a week ago.
Well, the good news is we were going to cover trout at Luigi's.
Yes.
And we're going to cover trout at the boat show.
Oh, yeah.
So
you can come down and just have a ball with us down at the boat show, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. And I'm trying to think of anything else. I know there's other stuff, but we'll have to think about it and get back to you. And what a well-organized show this is.
It usually is.
Yes. And thank you guys for listening all over the U.S., Florida, the east coast of Florida. Thank you guys.
Australia, wow.
Yeah, Australia is so cool. And, you know, Great Britain, as always, you know. And for those of you in Deutschland, Patriot Heil. It's
Gesundheit.
It's the... it means, you know, good luck, good fishing kind of thing. It's kind of praise to the fish god type guy. But I sold a lot of tackle in Germany. I worked all over Europe. Yep. Love Europe. My favorite country, although I lived and worked in Germany a lot, I still have a soft spot in my heart for Austria. Something about being in the Alps, and we're going to talk about some of the fishing and that over there one of these days. But what a gorgeous place. Sitting in a little log tavern out on benches, you know, hand-cut benches, drinking booze that's made from a flower that only grows in the Alps. Yes, I imagine me drinking. I've been lucky to have fishing take me around the world. But anyway, this is going to end this radio fishing, this little bit of last nonsense. And thank you guys so much for listening. Captain Kale, running his... it's not a pontoon boat, but it's a monster.
It's,
and if you'd like to book Kale, what's your telephone number, Kale?
My number is 941-916-4538.
And you can just click Kale's picture right next to the show, and it will take you to all his websites. And he does charters on his boat, charters on other people's boats, instructional trips. You know, if you need to know how to tie a knot, Kale, sure, you got to do that. If you need to work your electronics, big thing.
Yeah,
people learning to run their electronics. So whatever you need, Kale can give you a hand with that. And thank you again for listening. Fish and Frank, I'm one of the most disorganized but interesting, really interesting shows. A little bit like heaven, because I'm fishing with the guys. Okay.